Welcome to the Profit Talks podcast, hosted by the Orange County Inland Empire SBDC Network, funded in part by the U.S. Small Business Administration and the California Office of the Small Business Advocate. This show is the go-to resource for business owners seeking empowerment, education, and resources to succeed. Join us as we connect you with experts, share the triumphs of fellow entrepreneurs, and reveal the wealth of assistance available to you today to level up your business. So let's go. Let's dive in and learn more. Well, today we're going to learn about the number one, I think, category of small businesses out there. I'm going to call them family-owned businesses. And we've got an expert on family-owned businesses. She's lived the journey. She's helping others navigate the journey. Welcome, if you will, Katie Rucker.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Katie Rucker, you have seen this family business from several different angles. You and your twin sister have taken over your dad's business. Let's talk about that for just a moment, and then we'll talk about the business, the extra business, if that wasn't enough, the other business that you guys founded. So what was your dad's business, and why did you take it over?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me and here to kind of share just a little bit about our story. So our dad started his company in 1985. We're called McKenzie Corporation. We are an Orange County-based customer insights consulting firm. So we grew up with the company in the bonus room of our house and it eventually moved out and, you know, it grew up as well. Our dad started the company. His measurement for success was really just to be able to take care of and support his family, just that entrepreneur spirit.
And what is it that they do? It's rather specific. It's a unique niche in the marketplace here.
Yeah. So we are a customer insights and market research consulting firm. So we do everything from insight strategies. We work primarily with sales and marketing teams, with B2C mainly focused companies. Mm-hmm. Everything from the power sports world, healthcare, nonprofits, kind of just across the gamut of industries. Just mainly our criteria for customer base is brands that are passionate about creating exceptional experience for their consumers. We just love people who care about, you know, making the world better.
And so your dad was a data geek. He must have liked data.
Our dad is a self-proclaimed data nerd. He hired self-proclaimed data nerds. I actually always say I am not a numbers person, which is kind of strange to be owning a research company, but I studied sociology in college. I'm fascinated by the inner workings of people and how people work together in communities. And so I think that's, you know, what I bring to the company. But Jenny and I took over ownership in 2013. As you said, twin sisters, we did not get along. We actually went to different high schools. And so it is interesting in family business. I think, you know, is anytime that you say, you know, would you work in a family business? Could you imagine working with your sibling? Those types of things.
Yeah.
99.99% as the data company. I would say that the research would show that most people will say absolutely not.
Yeah. And husband and wives, brothers and sisters, children and parents.
Uncles. Yeah. Yeah. I think the perception is that it is extremely difficult, which it is. But as we always kind of say, work and just jobs in general are difficult and families in general sometimes could be difficult. We just, you know, put it all into one and overcome some of those challenges by just having brave and honest.
I'll give you one example. Here at OC Talk Radio, we've talked about this topic a lot through the years. And I think I mentioned you offline. We even did a show for a while on family offices, a company that managed family offices and what that dynamic was. We'll talk about all these things a little bit, but let me give you one example that I always stuck in my mind. We got to meet the couple times, the great entrepreneur Wing Lam, who started Yahoo Fish Taco. Very colorful guy, wears wild clothes and a goatee and the whole thing.
His big socks.
Yeah. And he talked about rather bluntly one time when he came in here about starting it with family and friends. Hey, this is a bunch of surfers. We're going to have this cool shop. And like we saw down in Mexico, we're going to make fish tacos and this won't this be. And it was until it became serious. And at some point it started to grow. This is a real business. And the decisions we make impact more than us. There's a lot of people that work for us now. And the if we screw up, we can blow this whole thing. And at some point he had to fire. I don't know if it was family or friends or both. But he had to go to them and say, you know, we need somebody with more skill set than you've got. We were just a bunch of surfer dudes. Now we need people with accounting degrees and marketing backgrounds and stuff. He said, you know, it's hard to fire employees or hard to let people go. Try and let your uncle go or your brother go or your friend go. And that adds to the whole dynamic. And then what's the next family get together like? The next Thanksgiving dinner where you fired Uncle Joe here or something, or forced Cousin Sue out or something here. That's a real problem because you've now got a whole different layer of relationships on top of the work relationships. Talk about that a little bit. How do you manage?
Yeah, you know, the three circle model is something that's talked a lot about in family businesses. So you have your family circle, you can have the ownership circle, and then you can have a management circle. Because then as you go, as you also mentioned offline, you can go from entrepreneur who starts the company, which is like what we was talking about, then doing a succession or transition to G2 or generation two ownership. That's a big, it's a hard one because you really are going from that free loving entrepreneur spirit where you're really starting to think multi-generational and you have to start putting systems and process in place that
is can't actually, all just be in your head. I know how to do this and nobody else does. Right.
Exactly. And then when you really start, a lot of complexity then starts coming in when you start going from G3, G4, G5, and you get bigger and bigger because your family unit, which then is the ownership circle that can be the different shareholders, can get bigger and bigger. So you can have more family members that own a piece of the business, but then they're not in the management circle. And then that can cause its own complexity. So a lot of times then they do talk about needing to have scheduled time to have meetings in each one of those three circles, have topics that you say, is this, which circle should that be or which room should those conversations be in? And they, some of them could overlap, but a lot of times the issues can be that you're trying to have too many conversations within one circle and not actually separating them.
Yeah.
And so taking time to then say at the ownership level circle, do you have any sort of policies about employment? Do you have policies regarding married in and spouses? Do you have policies around how the ownership structure of those shares should be done? And then in the management one, you do need to put in policies about if families working within the operating business, who do they report to? What is the structure about like promotions and those types of things? What are the skill sets that they need before they're allowed to come in and kind of all of that? And then how are decisions made regarding innovation growth, regarding risk levels and all of those different kinds of things. So you have to, it's a lot to unpack.
100 topics we could talk about there. We could take any one of those and spend a whole half hour talking about
totally
it.
Totally good.
But I guess I'm looking at the upper level picture. How do you separate personal history, animosities, friendships, feuds, all that kind of stuff? This is what you've done to me since I was six. Would you leave it alone? We're in business now. We can argue about what I did to you when you were six later, or this is what you do at home, or this is what I hate about you, or, you know, you always like Joey better or something here.
This is a topic I like absolutely love talking about. And actually, we were just, Jenny and I were just in Minneapolis at the University of St. Thomas last week speaking with a group of about 150 people, their advisor group.
A school I actually know well. My family's from Minneapolis. And
oh, my God, it was beautiful.
Some of them went to that. Yeah.
The people there were so kind. They were just
It's a different world.
Different, very different world, but beautiful campus. But we were talking on sibling partnerships. And one of the things specifically that we did talk about that relates to your question there is, I think what we need to do, what people need to do, and it's hard. I mean, all of it, it's mucky and it's messy and it goes on for a while. So there's not a quick and easy answer. But I believe that bringing at least even siblings, but I also believe with other family members to the table, and it can be, you can do it facilitated. We did have a transition consultant who helped us with a lot of.
I think you need sometimes a referee in the room here. Yeah.
I think so too. For us, it was actually putting a lot of things is putting assumptions and our limiting beliefs and our that prior narrative, like you said. I think that there was a quote I read in a book that called I Might Be Wrong, and I'm not sure. It was a forest monk who lived in the Tibetan forest for 30 years in his stories. But he talked a lot about that we carry all of this baggage, right, of the past with us. But we do actually have the agency to pause for a moment and put our baggage down, take a big deep breath, and decide what baggage makes sense to carry forward.
Yeah,
and I think that being able to put some of those things on the table and then realize that we actually have this privilege and this honor to get to know our family members. And I speak specifically around on the sibling side of things. I now have chosen my twin sister to be my best friend and business partner.
Yeah.
And it is a blessing to be able to be in business with her. I'm inspired by her. I think her strengths make me a better person. We offset each other. And we realized that instead of being in competition for the top spot, which is what a lot of that is, but that's coming
especially
from
twins. You're always compared. You're who came
first. And I think a lot of that's coming from ego and competition of sibling rivalries. But actually, if you stop and talk about what each of you actually want to achieve, like what your vision for your own personal legacy is, you may not actually be competing for the same thing if you're honest about it. And so there's the opportunity to support each other on the collective kind of journey in the family business path that you may not actually be trying to compete for the first, like to the top spot if you let all that go.
Let's flip it around. Is there a positive side? You know these people in and out. You understand how they think. You understand their motivations. You may not understand your managers or your president or your division chiefs or other people like that that you've brought in from the outside. And at the end of the day, and it doesn't matter how much do we feud, I don't have any brothers and sisters, but I've seen it can work both ways, where that feud just can never get over, or they can put it aside because at the end, I still love you. You're still my brother. You're still my sister. You're still my uncle or whatever here.
Yeah. And I think that you can, if you've created that then like regrounding of like safe conversations, we can start to call each other out in a certain way that you probably, like you said, can't call out your manager and different kinds of things.
Yeah.
And realizing that sometimes if, let's say they're coming in, you know, my sister's coming in hot on something, it actually may have nothing to do with you, me. Maybe it's that she doesn't actually know the answer and doesn't know how to like say that, or she's all these different kinds of things. So we can say, hey, let's do a little time out here. The energy's a little off. Let's like reset here and start over and say like, what is the actual issue that we're addressing? And sometimes that can be harder when it's not family, but you also then have to know when your siblings come in hot, it may actually have nothing to
do with you. Do you have to set a commitment?
A lot of times we think that it is.
I did a business for a short while with a very good friend, almost like a brother, somebody I'd known since I was a little kid. And we were very close. And I sat down and we literally put it in writing and said, nothing that happens in this business, we may not agree, we may break up, the business may fail, we may want to go in different directions, but nothing will impact our friendship. If it comes to that, then we'll call it quits.
Yeah.
You know, the friendship comes first. Family comes first.
I think you have to commit to also like doing that and saying it in a different way. You have to commit to not fighting dirty, right?
Yeah,
and that with family, we sometimes can, and we can get right.
Because you know where those buttons are. You found them when they were 8 or something here. Yeah.
And we have to forget about that, right? We have to now realize that we're all, you know, we've grown up and now we have a lot to be able to offer as the people that we are today. And on both sides, I really was like, if I want to be seen for the person that I am today, I have to, you know, do the same, you know, and see them and see my parents for who they are today and the strengths that they have and separate certain bits. And then realize again, like I said, that we have actually the honor to be able to carry on and create these generational businesses.
So let's talk about generations of business now, not just the difficulties of working with your spouse and your friends and your family and all these other things here, of all that extra layer of connection and history and all the stuff that comes with good or bad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about parents trying to pass down a business to the next generation. How do you let go? This is my business. I'm going to tell you how to run it. Don't screw it up. I got it running great. Just take it over and run it and do it exactly the way I did it, because that's the way this business has worked for 20 years. That probably doesn't work real well for the next generation and maybe misses the opportunity to take it to the next level here.
Yeah. I mean, there's, again, on all of these conversations, there's so much complexity. You know, a thing that we hear a lot in the space is honoring the past, you know, and honoring the legacy that you've had before. And when we first stepped in, we really felt that and thought that the way to honor him was to continue running the business the way that he had it.
Right.
We inherited an amazing legacy team. He had team members who've been with us for like over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thought really is they know what they're doing, you know. And then we also realized in unpacking it in like retrospect and hindsight, he only knew how to teach us what to do based on his experience,
right,
you know?
Right.
But as we were doing that and living that for a while, it just didn't feel authentic to us. And so we were running a company in a way that in company culture that just didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And then the more that it doesn't feel right, you get into the spots of saying, is this really what I want to do? Maybe right. I should leave. Like, I can make more of an impact somewhere else.
And I know an awful lot of people that say, we used to have a show host here who's had the opportunity to inherit a very successful business back in the Midwest, said, I'm not going to do it. It isn't my vision. It isn't my passion. It's theirs. And if I do it, I'm going to want to do it differently. And maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong, but I don't know that they're going to give me the opportunity to do that.
So we ended up actually like sitting then down with our dad and really saying what we believe that honoring the legacy that you've given and the foundation of this amazing company is actually to ensure that it stays relevant for the market conditions that we took over.
Because the world changes.
And then where the business was going in the future. And then to be able to do that, it also needed to be led in a way that felt authentic to us. Because if we were going to be successful, and again, that next generation, and what we did say to him many times was, you know, how many times did you make mistakes when you were getting going?
Let us make a mistake.
Yeah. And we need to know that we have your trust and faith in us that we will make mistakes. That's 100%. We are all human. Right. We're going to make mistakes no matter what. But you have to, if we are doing this based on the foundation of strong family values, the vision of where we want to go, that vision of caring about the consumer is truly at the core of what he started this business of. We do things fundamentally different because the world is fundamentally different. But it is at the core very similar. It's just, you know, it's similar and different all at the same time. So we then had to finally say, what feels authentic to us?
Right.
And if we're going to run this company, we need to bring our voice to the table and ensure that we are achieving not only helping to continue the foundation of what he did, but we need to make sure that we're able to visualize kind of the legacy that we want to now leave.
So
that is a hard conversation to have with your family.
I'll bet. His dad's like, his impulse is just, I know how to do it. Just do it this way, please. Yeah. But he's got to trust in you. He's got to realize things have changed and the old ways have got to adapt and got to update.
If it's and we are blessed. Our dad has been super supportive from the very beginning. So he says, do whatever. And then he says, I don't really know what you're doing. Oh, okay. Now I understand. Okay, but now I don't understand. And it's all a part of it and stuff like that. But he is one of our biggest cheerleaders and champions from the sidelines now.
All right. Well, we didn't mean to go all the whole episode just down on that one company here, but I thought it gave us some background because you then decided, why do another company? You got one. Why your sister want to open up Next Gen Collaborative? And what is that all about?
Yeah. So again, and actually I do feel like, so thank you for the way that conversation was going, because it really is actually going deep on family businesses. So for us, we actually joined at Cal State Fullerton. They have the Center for Family Business.
I know it very well. Yes, they've come
in. Yes, and that's what, then we were actually at the Family Business Center at the University of St. Thomas. And so we've been spending time, but that Family Business Center at Cal State Fullerton made a huge impact for us. That is where we then met our transition consultant, who was through the Family Business Consulting Group out of Chicago, but she was living here. And that group and that community that we found, it made us feel like we weren't alone. So even like the story you were sharing about Wing Lam, he's then been able to connect in with other, I don't know if he's a member, but he's very prominent in that group.
Very prominent in that community, yes.
As well. And being able to meet other business owners who are dealing with some of these types of challenges. You can go to, there's a networking meeting that we could go to morning, lunch, and dinner every single day. But it's very small when you can actually pull the curtain back and talk about these types of dynamics. And so the more that we got involved in the center, we started finding out different kinds of coaches, consultants, advisors that are available. And what we found is a lot of times those consultants or advisors are brought in by the current generation. So like you said, when our dad was starting to think about transition, he did not think about moving the company to be a family business. He was really thinking about closing it or selling some things off.
Right.
And then we approached him on that. But a lot of times it's the parents or the current generation that brings it in and says, this is what my kids need to learn. This is what my kids, so it's this push down concept.
Right.
And really, if we also look at different generations, not generations just of family business, G1, G2, G3, but really also then like the millennials, the Gen X, Gen Zs, and all different kinds of people, they just have a different way than the baby boomers and stuff like that.
Clearly, right. Clearly. As much as that makes me angry. We figured it out. Why can't you just follow it? No, it's
but
a whole different world.
But I think that there's an opportunity. What we really found was that there is an opportunity that generation wants to be learning, wants to take ownership over their process, like their learning process, their growth plans, and those types of things, and want to also know that they're going to make an impact in the world in a positive
impact
way.
In the world is the number one thing I hear about the generations behind my baby boomer generation. My dad's famous thing to me was I'd sit and wonder in the 60s, that's when we first started asking these questions, what do I want to be and what's going to fulfill me? My dad said, just go and get a job. He's from the Depression generation.
Right?
Just get a job.
Just go work.
Sense. And nobody ever asked him when he worked, are you happy here? Are you fulfilled?
I do think that there's advice. Right now, we hadn't really seen that there was a lot of advisors in the space kind of speaking to that younger generation of saying,
that
why don't
next gen, like we call the company here. Yeah,
exactly. And collaborative for us, it really is. And that's that collaborative way of kind of creating what that future is going to look like.
You mean it's not top down? It's not command and control? It's not follow the rules.
We're trying to change the narrative. And so for us, it is changing the narrative. And again, it's not to shift the power, as we were saying, but in a way kind of equalize it. How do we actually get next gens coming to the table and saying, hey, I did my own self audit and here's some of the areas that I think that I need to grow in. What are your thoughts? And then it's creating more of a two-way dialogue versus, again, that command and control and talk down. And I think that really then also being able to have a view and a vision for the future, like the legacy that each of us individually want to make, to bring that to the conversation as well, to be able to say, I honor the legacy that you have and the direction that you want to go, but this is also what's important to me. So how do we make it a win-win where we can continue what you have, but how do we create space that allows me to also, you know, live it up to what I want to be able to believe, you know, the impact in the world.
So let me ask you the last question here. Why did you come to the SBDC? What was there at the SBDC that wasn't in Cal State? They got a wonderful program to work with family businesses and the dynamics. What was it that you needed? How did we fit into the equation?
Yeah, I actually learned about the SBDC through one of the Center for Family Business webinars one time. And while I have owned a company now for quite a number of years, I've never actually started a business. Mm-hmm. So when Jenny and I first started toying around with this idea, you know, that I'm doing my Google searches, try to figure out what are the things to get started. And then I'm all about efficiency, consistency, kind of like top strength finder. So I do the operational administrative side of McKinsey Corp. So I'm always like, how do we get from A to B as fast as possible? I'm going to make some mistakes again, but if I can learn from people along the way. And the SBDC, when we reached out to them, we got connected with an amazing consultant who just had such a creative marketing mind as well.
Let's do a shout out to that consultant here.
Kathleen Swift. She was amazing.
Okay.
So awesome, actually. I like loved her energy. And she would, you know, poke at us and challenge us. And so she really helped us with just the initial basics. This is how you get your business license. And at the beginning, I felt like I should know these things, but I've never started a company. So just because you own one and you inherit it, it all was already
doesn't mean you have to know how to put a plan in place and go out and figure out, do I do it virtual? Do I do it in office? Do I hire people? Do I need money?
Price modeling and marketing strategies. And even then, you know, again, I had tools, but we wanted to look at this through a completely different lens. And the resources were just, they were so amazing. And it was just being able to have the support and bounce ideas off of. We would get business opportunities and I'd shoot Kathleen a note and say, I'd love to just kind of kick around a couple different price models. She gave us some ideas that I had never even thought of. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, it's a great resource that, again, even though I've been a business owner, I've just never started one. And to know that there's resources like this for our community.
Free resources. That's what always amazes me about this.
That's it. No charge.
Oh, my goodness. What's the catch? Yeah. No catch.
Like three different people and said, why are you doing it on your own? You need to call them. They're so amazing.
Yeah. Well, because the SBA and every politician in America wants to foment small businesses. So the SBA is out there with this money and this expertise. They fund groups like the SBDC and find all these active consultants. These aren't people that did it 20 years ago. These are people that are doing it today. They offer part-time some services, and they get compensated by the SBA and stuff. It's not just a free, nice thing. And so you get some really active, high-level consultants.
Yeah, wicked smart. I mean, Stephanie was just absolutely amazing. And I think just her expertise and her energy, I will say too, that when we first did our first interview, I said, listen, I need somebody, one who can stay kind of be at the same energy level that we have, but also a sharp shooter and who's going to challenge us. Like we kind of also were able to say, this is the type of personality that we're going to work best with. I think all the different consultants would probably be amazing, but like I want somebody who's super quick and fast and like, thinking innovatively and different ideas.
Well, and the other thing, it's maybe that's an interesting way to look at it, because if you hire a consultant, partly they want to please you. They don't want to tick you off. They don't want to make you mad and poke the bear too hard here so you'll roar, because they want to keep the check coming. But the SBDC, they got no agenda in that thing here. So we're going to tell you what we really think, good, bad, or otherwise here. And we hope you'll continue. We hope you'll grow. We want to see some success. But we're not trying to please you to keep the retainer coming here.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that that really spoke also volumes of like hearing kind of who we were, what we were looking to do, and that we got paired up with like really the right type of consultant that was the best fit for it to be a win-win on all sides.
So as your consultancy has grown, how long have you been doing this?
We just started in February, so it's just,
And is there an enthusiasm in the market? Because I'll tell you the other question I want to end with here. This is what I've heard over and over and over again. Most family businesses do not make it past the third generation. There's the founder. There's somebody whose passion was in this. They pass it on to the kids, and the kids try not to screw it up and maybe try and take it to the next level. I'm going to do more with it than dad or grandpa did with it here. I'm going to see if I can add something to it. So there's they're invested in trying to grow it and show that they're worthy of this gift, right? Then the third generation comes along and says, this is just a check. I don't want this business. It's a pain in the butt. Just pay me out. I don't want to know it. It's not my interest. I could care less about it. It's been a source of income. Just pay me out. And they don't seem to have any connection to it. Now, there are exceptions to that. I grew up in Detroit. The Ford family famously has kept members alive through generations. But most family businesses, by the third generation, they start to fizzle or fall apart.
I don't know the specific data points on like what the percentages are, but you are correct. The farther you go along, the harder it is. One thing that we've really come to, and we learned a lot just even from our small groups here in Fullerton and then some of the conferences, Family Business Magazine has an amazing conference called Transitions. They do it on both coasts. It just was, I think, last weekend in San Diego. And that we've actually met like eighth generation family businesses, which is just amazing. But what a lot of times is too, so the original founding operating business may end up actually selling off depending on what it is. But there's a mindset shift, and something to think about with family businesses is that you can go from that original family business to becoming a family enterprise. Mm. And so how do you actually start taking, if you want to sell that off, do you actually then use those funds to fund kind of the enterprise actually fund multiple businesses that speak to the different, you know, shareholders who might want to do it, and or then do like real estate assets or those kinds of things, so that you still are, you have then an umbrella of different types of services that or businesses that can be interconnecting, or they can be diversely different. So a lot of times now people are saying, what about your kids? So Jenny and I have four girls between the two of us, ranging from 17 to 9. Mm-hmm. Right now it's still way too early to say, but we are actually starting. And so Next Gen Collaborative is actually under an umbrella company that we've started. And it's now just this one consulting firm under it. Mackenzie's still separate today, but we are already starting to think, how do we start early learning these lessons from the, you know, people that we've met in our community to say, how do we actually start something that's more of an enterprising idea that we can actually be setting up potentially different entities that speak to that? And we can continue the entrepreneur spirit that, again, we've all inherited from our dad.
Right.
And we can continue that entrepreneur spirit for generations to come. So I think there's ways to look at it differently, that one founding business may change, but what else has happened within that family enterprise that they may actually still be continuing just outside of that family original.
I'm reminded, and I may have some of the titles wrong, but Rick Caruso, who the large developer, ran for mayor recently in Los Angeles, very well large real estate developer. His father started, I think it was General Rental Car. One of those rental car company. Maybe it was Dollar. Maybe it was General.
Well, Enterprise is a family-owned business, but I don't think that's the one that you're talking
about. And so his dad started this, you know, rental car business after World War II, and it grew, whichever one it was, and then that provided the family fortune to morph into this development thing, something totally unrelated that they've grown even bigger. So
exactly. So I think that's kind of like, and for us, Jenny and I keep saying we want to change the narrative of family businesses in America, because I do think that there is this perception, you see like the Succession or Yellowstone, the different kind of TV shows that are
exactly. I was going to mention all those TV shows, Yellowstone, Succession.
Highlight all the negatives of it, but I do believe, right. I mean, so much of like the small businesses that make up Main Street are family businesses. And if we can change the narrative to say that there is ways to be able to do it, that you can actually have champions in your corner and people there to help you along the way. That's for us, like, where it just brings me so much joy. I just like absolutely love it, because I just think that there's so much potential for us to continue building businesses that are based on strong family values, strength on generations.
And there's a pride. We had, I forgot their names now, the two gentlemen, they're older gentlemen that run Farmers and Merchant Bank. And I think they're the third generation. Mm-hmm. Their grandfather started, and there is already a fourth. I'm not sure if there's a fifth yet, but there's a fourth and potentially a fifth generation. For them, it's not just a legacy. There's a pride.
You know,
this is ours. I'm part of this. I get to continue this great company and see it continue to grow and go in different directions here. You know?
And I think family businesses, because again, we're thinking generational, right? We're thinking about like, how do we want to leave the world a better place for our next generation? So it also is a focus on not just the success of that business, but a lot of times family businesses are so ingrained in the local communities.
Right.
Focusing, I think we have an opportunity to be at the forefront thinking about environmental issues and corporate social responsibility, how to treat our communities great, because we really do want to treat, you know, our team members and our employees the same way that we would like give that same level of respect that we give to our family members. I think there's so much good about it that I do think, if again, we could change it to be not the negative narrative, but clickbait doesn't happen on the happy stories always with the nudge.
And I think all these businesses you just rattled off, they all have sort of a family feel to them still, even if they're big, because they run by a family. So they tend to think of everybody in there. Even if you're not related, you're part of our family, and they see themselves as part of their community. It's when the business gets sold off and bought by some conglomerates and some other company, country rather, it loses that, the roots.
It loses that touch. And I think that actually, if we can focus on these family businesses and these small businesses, that again, small businesses are generally going to be an entrepreneur family who just started. So it could be the local bakery or the local restaurant that is actually an entrepreneur who started it. And then there is the potential of it becoming a generational family business. And if we can actually keep focusing on the good that's happening within these smaller businesses, and that's where, again, for us too, we love the small to mid-sized family businesses, because we think that there's so much potential there that our communities can continue to actually be run by our friends, our neighbors, our community members, and that it's, is there a way to be able to strengthen that community feel back again, where some parts of our country were losing some of that?
Yeah,
and so is there a way to actually bring back that and be able to have that connectivity? I think that
maybe that's why the SBDC is a good fit, because the guy that runs our region, all the centers in our region in the Orange County Inland Empire SBDC, Mike Daniel, is himself a second generation owner of a small business. I think they'd like Rocky Mountain candy stores or something like that.
Oh, I didn't know that. I love the Rocky Mountain candy.
There you go. And he's got several of them. His dad started it and he's running it. And now his son's stepping into the business. So he's in that, he's actively in that whole transition. He believes in that model. He lives it. That's his, outside of running our organization, that's his day job. That's his other job here.
I love that. Well, this is just, I mean, this is things like, again, Jenny and I right now, we've gone to Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're talking about going to South Dakota next year in the spring to be able to speak.
And that's the Midwest. That's the center. If you're going to go where there's family businesses to stick around, I grew up in those areas.
Yeah.
There is much more of a generational attachment. The farm that's been in the family for five generations, the ranch, the local hardware store, the something, the manufacturing thing here, they tend to survive longer. They didn't move all over the country and just start all over again here. There is something about that. Maybe it's because
it's connection
older.
To the community. I think it is something, and there is something for us to learn from that. And it's a privilege and an honor to be able to go out and speak with those different companies there, and then to be able to now expand our network of the types of family businesses that we're connected with.
Well, I hope you'll come back and share more, because I think this is a big story. I think we're the whole world, like the SBA and the SBDC, is out to create new businesses. That's wonderful. But what happens to those new businesses after the entrepreneur leaves the scene, retires, dies, whatever.
It's huge.
Do they just sell them all off and now we're just conglomerating these things together, or can they stay in the family and continue to be connected to the community? I think that's your challenge. The Next Gen Collaborative. How do they find you if they want to learn more about either your consulting firm or this new business that you've taken on to help others like you, then the next generation, take on these roles? How do we find those websites?
Sure. So nextgencollaborative.com would be to find out more of that. And then I'm really active on LinkedIn. So you can look me up, Katie Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R, on LinkedIn. And then that'll have a link over to both.
And if they want to hire you to do some insights, what's the other company's name?
McKenzie Corp.com. That's M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E Corp. So I'm actually fourth generation Catherine McKenzie. So McKenzie is on the female side. So we are Scottish. I walked down the aisle with my dad in full kilt.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I love you already.
That's actually where the family name and the family business comes from. So McKenzie.
I'm very Irish, so I'm very into all that stuff.
From the Scots, yes. So McKenzieCorp.com. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Katie Rucker, what a fascinating story here. I think there's more to be told. Thanks for joining us here today on this episode of The Profit Talks, brought to you. As we conclude another episode of the Profit Talks podcast, we hope we've empowered your entrepreneurial spirit. Reach out to us to connect with our experts, and let's take your business to the next level. Keep those dreams alive, keep pushing forward, and stay tuned for more. And if you liked what you heard in today's podcast and you want your business to reach new heights, just contact us at profittalkspodcast.org or call us at 1-800-616-7232. That's 1-800-616-7232. So until next time, keep thriving.